We live in the atmosphere of a dynamic magnetic star that interacts with the Earth, the solar system, and space beyond. My name is Troy Klein, and you are listening to the fourth in a series of NASA podcasts for Sun Earth Day 2007, Living in the Atmosphere of the Sun. As many of you know, the Sun Earth Day program is made up of numerous activities and events that occur throughout the year, culminating with a webcast or broadcast near the spring equinox. The website is filled with a rich array of resources and materials that will help you make your Sun Earth Day event a reality in your local area. It also reaches a variety of audiences, including educators, teachers, and students, amateur astronomers, museums, and science centers. To give us more on the topic, I have Isabel Hawkins from UC Berkeley, California, standing by. Isabel is the informal lead for this year's Sun Earth Day program, so let's give her a call.
Hello.
Hello, Isabel.
Hi, Troy. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. We're happy to have you. You have quite a bit of information we need today. And basically, Isabel, you are the informal lead for Sun Earth Day 2007. Is that correct?
That's right.
Can you tell us what that means, informal lead or informal education?
Yes, basically I coordinate all the activities for what we call informal education.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that is any kind of education that happens in a free choice environment. So the person, you know, be a family, a child, a member of the general public, will choose to go to a place such as a museum, a planetarium, or a club, for example, an amateur astronomy club, and they choose to participate in fun activities related to science. And so in this case, we have developed a number of resources for free choice learning environments like museums, planetaria, for amateur astronomers when they work with the public, for youth clubs, and even national parks.
So if a teacher is interested in this, teachers should pretty much, when they go to the website or come to Sun Earth Day, they'll look primarily in the formal section, which is for the classroom. But if you are anything outside of the classroom, including the museums, after-school programs, that's considered informal.
That's right. Even you know, youth groups like Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, we encourage them to go to a site in our website for Sun Earth Day called Public Outreach. We also have a site for educators, part of the website has resources for the classroom, for teachers to use in the classroom. And those materials are more structured, and they have to be aligned with standards for learning, so they're a little bit different. Free choice kinds of materials are usually of short duration. It's something that can be done by groups that have various ages, for example, a family group or an adult and a child together. They will require very easy to find, inexpensive materials, and many times will make something in a museum or in a club, for example, and be able to take it with them to be able to use at home or in other parts of the area of the museum, for example.
Now, I know when you were in, most recently, Side, Turkey, and that was an incredible experience with the eclipse, and there were quite a few activities off to the side over apart from where the actual eclipse was being broadcast out. Would those be considered make and take activities where students were looking at the shadow of the sun and the right through the branches of trees, for instance?
Yes, I think that, for example, some of the things that we did in Turkey, and actually we involved several educators, including you, Troy, I remember, and Caroline Ng and others, is basically to work with students in an environment that's outside of the classroom. You can, for example, use very straightforward kitchen materials like a colander or even using their crisscross fingers to create pinhole cameras and then be able to see the partially covered sun as the moon goes right in front of it. You end up with a little crescent sun which gets projected through the holes between your fingers, for example, and that they act as little mini pinhole cameras. And so we used a variety of things. And then the kids started to experiment, which is fun, and they brought some tree branches and were looking at the images through the leaves. It's really fun. I mean, there's a big factor of just having fun and seeing signs of something that's very accessible.
Now, I know that you just recently had several make and take activities uploaded to the Sun Earth Day website. Can you describe a few of those activities for us so when people go, they'll exactly know what they're looking for.
Sure. What I recommend is that if you're an informal educator, say you're a museum educator or a youth group leader or an amateur astronomer that's working with kids or the public. Of course, you know, we also have a section on the website that's specific for amateur astronomers, but sometimes when they're working with children or youth clubs, it's good for you to also look under public outreach. So if you go to the Sun Earth Day website and you click on public outreach, you will find a variety of resources for you, including what we call make and take activities. So if we go to that section, and all these things are very easy to find. The website has been designed in a way that's very straightforward to navigate. So if you go to the make and take activities, you'll find a series of little icons, little images that give you a taste of what the activity is all about. And we begin with some of the fundamentals of the Sun-Earth connection. For example, a scale model of the Sun and the Earth that will show you in a very visual and engaging way relative size and distance of the Sun-Earth system. For the younger kids, we have edible models of the Sun so that you can create your own solar cookie.
Oh, no, I have cute. Done that. That is
yeah,
a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. I know, the raisins or chocolate chips become the sunspots. And then we have kids playing with shadows and other concepts that are related to eclipses, for example. And we explore typically unseen radiations from the sun, like ultraviolet, by using UV-sensitive beads. So there's just a lot of wonderful things that you can do with very, very simple materials and that engage children and adults and sometimes the whole group in a very fun way.
Now, if there are museums and people who are interested in participating and they've gone to the website and they have additional questions or they would like to email someone, how do they contact you?
Well, I think the best way that, you know, the most straightforward way that we recommend everybody does when they want to participate in Sun Earth Day is to be sure that you register. So if you go to the home page for Sun Earth Day, sunearthday.nasa.gov, right there on the front page, on the right-hand side, there's a button that says register. And when you register, you go to a web form, and very simply, you can fill out the registration. And if you select that you are a museum or other kind of informal educator, that information will go into a database. And then you will start to receive emails from me with updates on what's going on with Sun Earth Day. For example, we have a new resource out, or there's a webcast coming up, you know, be ready for it. The packets have been sent to you. And that's another important thing. When you do register, you get a free packet of amazing resources from NASA, from all the Sun Earth missions. And that can help you engage your audiences. So if you register, then you have a link to me. And you can, once you get my emails, you can respond to me. I have my contact information there. And you can respond to me and ask your questions.
That sounds really easy to do. And as of now, there are thousands of registrants that have, over the past several years, registered for Sun Earth Day and are still very active in Sun Earth Day, to the point that if people would like to receive a packet, they are limited, correct?
Yes, we only have about 15,000 packets, and they go like hotcakes. So
they sure do.
It's very good to it's very good to register early.
At the first come, first serve basis. However, if people don't get a packet if they didn't register in time, you can still download the majority of the materials directly from the website through PDF files, and we'll make sure that
that's the nice thing about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very straightforward thing to do, and also gives you access to the materials throughout the year, because that's the fun thing about Sun Earth Days. You can always find engaging and fun activities on the website throughout the year that you can use. We have, for example, this wonderful series called Technology Through Time, in which scientists and educators put up wonderful articles and the latest things about how human impacts of space weather, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's always very fun to look at, and that's throughout the year.
That's a good point. That also makes me think it'd be a good idea to tell people that not only can you get to this year's Sun Earth Day, but you can also get to past Sun Earth Days right from the Sun Earth Day homepage. And I know we worked quite a bit together when we did the Ancient Observatories Sun Earth Day theme, and there we were in Chichen Itza, and that's where I saw Isabel high on a platform about 70 feet straight up.
gosh. Well, that was an interesting story. I'm telling you.
I was terrified. I mean, you were a trooper. You went right up there even in a dress. And here I was in, you know, jeans and straps and scared to death. You saw the look of fear on my face. I know you did.
Well, it was actually just a mutual fear right there, trying to help each other. It was just, you don't realize how steep these structures are until you're up on the top. You're climbing up and you're feeling really confident. Oh, this is a piece of cake, you know, I'm just going up. Mm-hmm. And then when you get up there and you look back down, you can hardly see the edge of the pyramid. It's quite frightening.
Oh, it is. And plus, there are no rails up there, so the wind was blowing.
Oh, yes.
And not only that, but you were sitting on top of stools that were just placed on top of the platform.
I know. Well, those are the kinds of things that you just say, well, I love my job, I like science, you know, thank you for the sun and all those wonderful things. And
I know it.
You know, step up to the plate and do it. But it was quite the frightening experience.
Well, anybody who'd like to, that webcast came out beautifully. It was broadcast out in English and in Spanish, and it's still available on the Ancient Observatory's website. So if you go to sunearthday.nasa.gov and you click on the Ancient Observatory's icon, you'll see Isabel looking like she's not scared at all, but I think her toes were wrapped around the bottom of that stool.
I know, that's right. They actually had some like sandbags or something to hold them still.
I wasn't up there. I stayed under the tree.
But the nice thing about the webcast is it's also in Spanish. So
yes,
you can access it in the two languages. So I recommend that's actually a fun thing for people to show in their museums as well. If you have a small auditorium, for example, and you want to do something related to the sun, you can show some of these webcasts. People like to watch them even to this day.
Now, you're currently working on some projects to help translate many of the materials we have into Spanish. A lot of them have already been translated.
Yes, that's right. There are resources even on our website. If you go to the educators section, right there under hotspots, you will find Spanish resources. And we have lots of wonderful activities, you know, related to auroras, to making a simple solar clock that you can use with your students outside, an introduction to the sun, you know, even like satellite models that kids can put together. Just a lot of wonderful activities and even some simple print resources like little books that the kids can color and can learn about basic facts about the sun. So there's just a lot of wonderful materials, and what we've been trying to do is make them more coherent so that people who are working with Spanish-speaking audiences can find a whole story of the Sun-Earth connection in the materials and follow through in a way that's more coherent. So that's what we're planning on doing. We have some resources that have been translated, but we'd like to do more. And there's also a wonderful resource by Project Astro that was funded by the National Science Foundation that's called Universe at Your Fingertips in Spanish, or Universo a Tus Pies in English, or Universo a Tus Pies in Spanish. And that would be a wonderful also resources to be able to integrate into the materials that we have. So we're working on all those angles.
Well, it sounds like this has expanded incredibly over the past few years. So for everybody out there listening, make sure you go visit the website and take a look at the materials Isabel's talking about. They truly are incredible, and a lot of people already have been participating with those materials. Now, Isabel, with the remaining few minutes that I have, I always like to find out a little bit more about the person that I'm talking to or interviewing. And could you tell us just a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in education? Because I know you're a scientist by trade.
Yeah, sure. I can tell you a little bit about, you know, how I got interested in astronomy and how I ended up in education. But I was born in Cordoba, Argentina. 48 years ago. Imagine that. But
wow.
When I was very young, like around 8 or so, I remember there was an encyclopedia salesman that just came to our house, and there was this amazing book that he had. It was a special astronomy supplementary book, and I just latched onto that thing, and I was just so hoping that my parents would buy it, and then, of course, they did, and I was so happy. I think it really changed my life. I just wouldn't put it down, and I was so fascinated by the blackness of space. You know, why was space black, you know, compared to our blue sky? And so that was just a question that fascinated me. And from then on, I just started to, you know, read up on astronomy any chance I got. My dad took me to the planetarium in Buenos Aires when I was young, and that just sort of really sparked my interest even more. And so then when I really decided that that was my career, I ended up in the United States studying astronomy because there aren't any big telescopes in Argentina. There are some in Chile, but basically it was a good thing for me to try and come to the States and study. And so I was very fortunate, and I got a PhD in astronomy at UCLA, and then worked for satellite missions, actually, for NASA satellite missions here at UC Berkeley for several years until the web came along. And we started thinking that, gosh, the web's a great medium to share some of the wonderful results from the satellite with much broader audiences, mm-hmm. not just the scientists. And so we started working on just very simple web interfaces that would allow people to access our data, and working with teachers and museums. And that was a while back. And, you know, ever since then, I've just been so fascinated in just figuring out how to best show the materials, how to best share the materials with museum educators, with amateur astronomers, with other scientists, so they can work with their audiences. It's been very rewarding, and I have never regretted my path that has sort of taken me more towards education. And then I have a chance to work with wonderful people. So all of that, yes. You know, made it into a good outcome for me.
You know, it's always interesting when I talk to people about what was it that was that first spark that got you interested in space science or a career path. And most of the time, they can always go back to some story or instance when they were a small child, sometimes 5 years old, and they'll say, oh, yeah, I saw a rocket launch. And from that moment on, for me, it was my grandmother. She took me out, and she looked up at the sky and told me what the moon was and shared the moon with me. And I just saw it, like you said, in the blackness of space, and I was amazed. And it was also her shepherding that I saw the respect and how she revered, you know, that body in space. And I never forgot that.
Oh, that's great.
Well, Isabel, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with igniting the passion in young students around the world with these materials. And I look forward to seeing more.
Definitely. We'll continue to let our informal education audiences about updates on our website, about upcoming programs that will be of interest to you. So do check out our URLs on earthday.nasa.gov. And look under public outreach for your wonderful resources that you can use with your audiences.
All right. Thank you very much, Isabel.
Thank you, Troy. Thank you so much. We'll be in touch.
Been nice talking with you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
In upcoming podcasts, we will introduce you to the people working directly on space weather-related missions. And when possible, we plan to visit these people on location where they work. That can include clean rooms, lab facilities, and if we're lucky, a few launch sites. So it's shaping up to be a very exciting and informative lineup. For all other details about the Sun Earth Day program, including information about past Sun Earth Day themes, be sure to visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov.
Sun Earth Day is a program sponsored by the NASA Sun Earth Connection Education Forum at the Goddard Space Flight Center and at the UC Berkeley Space Sciences Laboratory. To find out more about the Sun Earth Day program, visit our website at sunearthday.nasa.gov.
This is Troy Klein signing off.